Today is Wednesday, May 25th, 2022, and you're listening to the World Socialist Website. Who is responsible for starvation and rising food prices? By Eric London. At the prompting of the Biden administration, the world's capitalist politicians, CEOs, and bought-off journalists have led a flow of deluge of crocodile tears over the global food crisis, which they claim was single-handedly created by Vladimir Putin. Addressing a well-fed crowd at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland on Monday, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen professed a newfound concern for the fragile countries and vulnerable populations that will suffer most from rising food prices. The crowd of billionaires applauded self-righteously when the former German defense minister blamed Russia for shamefully profiting off hunger. Heads nodded gravely when she urged the audience to provide the World Food Program with the supplies it badly needs to alleviate the threat of mass starvation. Rank hypocrisy. 6 months ago, UN World Food Program President David Beasley issued a one-time appeal to billionaires to help fight famine, which explained that if the world's richest people donated a mere $6.6 billion of their collective $13.1 trillion in wealth, or 0.04% of the total, world hunger could be eliminated in 2022, and millions of lives could be saved. This request, predictably, fell on deaf ears, and in the next 6 months, in a modern world of breathtaking technological progress, 4.5 million human beings died in the most ancient way imaginable. Every year, 9 million people starve to death, with hardly any attention from the capitalist media, which only drags up the dead when trawling for war propaganda. The real source of mass starvation and world hunger is capitalism. This week, Oxfam issued a report detailing the massive growth of social inequality over the course of the coronavirus pandemic, which has killed 20 million people. Oxfam reported that one new billionaire, quote, has been minted on average every 30 hours during the pandemic, end quote, including 62 individuals who made their money profiting off of rising food prices in the agribusiness industry. Quote, corporations and the billionaire dynasties who control so much of our food system are seeing their profits soar, the report read. For example, when von der Leyen denounced Vladimir Putin for using hunger and grain to wield power, there were two men in attendance, David McLennan, CEO of Cargill, and Brian Sykes, the company's COO, who may have joined in the applause. But according to the Oxfam report, the combined wealth of the Cargill family increased by $14.4 billion since the start of the pandemic, enough to feed the world hungry twice and still have billions left over. As the COVID-19 pandemic has demonstrated, there's no limit to the number of lives the capitalist class will sacrifice, rather than part with even the smallest fraction of its wealth. The architects of the US-NATO proxy war against Russia are similarly prepared to sacrifice the lives of billions of working people, both through hunger and nuclear catastrophe, in order to subjugate Russia and conquer its wealth. As for the present rise in food prices, the US government and its imperialist allies are primarily responsible. Joe Biden has repeatedly stated the US government's aim is to ensure a long and painful war, and the spike in food prices is in large part a response to US-led sanctions. As a result of the prolongation of the war, as the foreign minister of Egypt told the Financial Times, quote, millions will die. One industry expert told the UN Security Council last week, this is seismic. we stand the risk of an extraordinary amount of human suffering. End quote. According to a May 23rd report by the Eurasia Group, 400 million people have been made food insecure in just 90 days, bringing the total to a staggering 1.6 billion. The same report explains that if the war continues, global food prices will rise 45% this year, an unprecedented increase. The $40 billion military aid bill passed by the U.S. Congress this month is intentionally aimed at prolonging the war and will massively intensify the food crisis by interrupting planting seasons. The pennies that the bill directs for humanitarian aid are mere window dressing. Almost all of it will end up in the pockets of corrupt officials and criminals, just like the aid provided by the U.S. during the occupations of Afghanistan and Iraq. Every politician and every organization which supported this bill has voted to take food out of the mouths of millions of people across the world. This includes Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and Jamal Bowman, the Democratic Socialist of America, and international left groups like the International Socialist League, the French New Anti-Capitalist Party, and the world's Green Parties. In their support for the war, they have inevitably marked themselves as enemies of the working class, for whom the war is having a catastrophic impact. The intensification of the food crisis is throwing masses of workers into the class struggle. Massive levels of social inequality and the constant pumping of money into the financial markets have created runaway inflation that are driving up the cost of all products and basic necessities. David Beasley, the director of the World Food Program, recently warned, "We're all seeing riots and protesting taking place as we speak. Sri Lanka, Indonesia, Pakistan, Peru. We've seen destabilizing dynamics already in the Sahel, from Burkina Faso, Mali, Chad. These are only signs of things to come." End quote. Mass protests have now broken out across Iran, where a 300% hike in flour-based staples has provoked demonstrations coinciding with strikes of workers in cities like Tehran, with a population of 8.5 million. Ongoing protests and strikes of a nationwide character continue to take place in Sri Lanka, Peru, and elsewhere. In every country, the trade unions serve to break the class struggle and bar workers from waging a united struggle to meet urgent social needs. In Tunisia, the main union confederation was forced to announce preparations for a general strike in order to stave off the specter of mass wildcat action. Healthcare workers across the Eastern Cape of South Africa went on strike without the approval of the trade unions this month, as a result of rising food prices and the disastrous impact of the pandemic on the healthcare system. Bus drivers in Cordoba, Argentina, initiated a wildcat strike over food and other living costs. This movement is not isolated to the developing world. Baggage handlers in Copenhagen launched a wildcat strike last weekend over the rising cost of food and other basic necessities. According to the Danish press, the Danish Labour Court on Sunday ruled that baggage staff must resume work again on Monday, but that was not complied with. Aircraft workers in Saint-Nazaire, France, have launched wildcat walkouts on a daily basis over wages and increases to the cost of living. In England, the Tory finance minister has called the cost of living crisis apocalyptic. Workers are grappling with 9% inflation and a record 54% rise in gas and electricity bills. According to an Ipsos poll, 85% of Britons are concerned about the impact of rising living costs in the next 6 months. In this explosive context, the wildcat strike by 1,000 workers at several oil and gas rigs in the North Sea, demanding massive pay increases to account for the rising cost of living, is a powerful sign that workers view the trade unions as obstacles, not facilitators in the fight against the rising cost of living. Though the strike was subjected to a corporate media blackout, one industry news report noted, "The wage revolution has started. We are not singling out one company, but industry, worldwide as a whole. End quote. There's no way to address the cost of living crisis or the global food crisis within the framework of an individual struggle against one employer or company, no matter how militant. In the fight for affordable food and basic necessities, and a massive increase in wages, the working class must unite across workplaces, across industries, and across countries to harness its full strength. The fight is a political struggle against the entire capitalist class and the governments they control. It cannot be won without stopping the imperialist war, which drains humanity's technological genius and industrial might, directing it toward death and destruction when it is desperately needed to save and improve lives everywhere. This requires socialist revolution, the expropriation of the wealth of the rich, and the placing of the world's productive forces under the democratic control of the working class, to abolish hunger and want forever. We urge all workers interested in joining this international movement of the working class to contact the International Workers' Alliance of Rank and File Committees, the IWARFC, today. UK Plans Naval Intervention Against Russia in the Black Sea, by Thomas Scripps. Britain is again putting itself at the forefront of NATO's escalation of the war with Russia over Ukraine. On Monday, The Times reported, Britain is in discussion with allies about sending warships to the Black Sea to protect freighters carrying Ukrainian grain. End quote. Foreign Secretary Liz Truss has discussed the plans with Lithuanian Foreign Minister Gabrielis Landsbergis. He explained that participating countries could provide ships or planes that would be stationed in the Black Sea and provide maritime passage for the grain ships to leave Odessa's port and reach the Bosphorus in Turkey. Landsbergis said of Britain's response to this proposal, "From my perspective, the British government is interested in assisting Ukraine in any way it can." A diplomatic source confirmed that Truss is in favor once the practicalities are agreed, including demining the harbor and providing Ukraine with longer-range weapons to defend the harbor from Russian attack, according to The Guardian. These plans are already in motion. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin announced Monday that Washington would be supplying Ukraine with Harpoon anti-ship missiles via a deal with Denmark. The Daily Mail reports that a handful of countries are willing to do the same, according to U.S. officials and congressional sources. Earlier this month, former senior NATO commander Admiral James Stavridis wrote for Bloomberg on May 6th, "It's worth considering an escort system for Ukrainian and other national merchant ships that want to go in and out of Odessa. The vast Black Sea is mostly international waters. NATO warships are free to travel nearly wherever they want, including into Ukraine's territorial waters and its 200-mile exclusive economic zone. Conceding those waters to Russia makes no sense. Instead, look for them to become the next major front in the Ukraine war." The Lithuanian foreign minister claimed, "This would be a non-military humanitarian mission and is not comparable with a no-fly zone. We would need a coalition of the willing countries with significant naval power to protect the shipping lanes and countries that are affected by this." The coalition of the willing is the formulation used to describe the imperialist-led alliance which carried out the illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq in 2003. A NATO-led naval intervention would be a deliberate military provocation designed to create a pretext for a direct clash with Russian forces carried out under the cover of a humanitarian mission to avert a global hunger crisis over which the imperialist powers do not lose a wink of sleep. Strategic analysts have been more honest about what is involved. Siddharth Kaushal of the Royal United Services Institute military think tank told the Financial Times, "To maintain a functional convoy system, you'd have to have a huge Western fleet stationed in the Mediterranean to rotate through the Black Sea. and risk escalatory confrontation with Russian warships. End quote. On May 17th, NATO began a vigilance activity, Neptune Shield, involving 19 nations and centered on the USS Harry S. Truman Carrier Strike Group in the Mediterranean. The strike group includes the Harry S. Truman aircraft carrier, the USS San Jacinto cruiser, 5 U.S. destroyers, and a Norwegian frigate. The Eastern Mediterranean is a permanent home to NATO's Standing Maritime Group II, composed of 14 ships, including 10 frigates, and the UK's HMS Diamond destroyer. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba bellicosely announced the war plans being discussed behind the scenes, saying of the Russian presence in the Black Sea that there was a military solution to this: defeat Russia. He continued, "If we receive even more military support, we'll be able to throw them back, defeat the Black Sea fleet, and unblock the passage for vessels." End quote. A defense advisor explained to the FT the aggressive operations being considered, noting, "Russia's diesel-powered submarines also have to resurface regularly, which makes them vulnerable to attack," and adding, "Destroying the Kerch Strait Bridge that Russia uses to supply Crimea could also leave Putin's forces struggling with the same kind of logistical problems it has faced elsewhere." The incendiary character of these plans being discussed is prompting nervous responses. Kaushal asks, "How many countries would want to risk their ships going cheek by jowl with the Russian Navy?" The Daily Mail cites a U.S. official who said no nation had wanted to be the first or only nation to send harpoons, fearing reprisals from Russia if a ship is sunk with a harpoon from their stockpile. The Daily Telegraph quotes Foreign Office sources saying, "Current discussions don't go as far as using warships to help unblock the war-torn country's ports." But the trajectory of the NATO-Russia conflict is towards such confrontations. Lawrence Friedman, an emeritus professor of war studies at King's College London, writes in the New Statesman, "The view up to now has been that this would be an unduly provocative move, subject to the same misgivings that led NATO to reject calls for a no-fly zone above Ukraine. But the Russian naval operation is an aspect of this war now coming into focus, where pressure could build for a NATO operation. If the war drags on, this is an issue that will not go away. The major naval powers need to be thinking ahead." A NATO offensive in the Black Sea has been long in the making, with the UK playing a prominent role. In June 2021, NATO carried out its largest ever operation in the region, Sea Breeze, involving 32 countries, 5,000 troops, 32 ships, 40 aircraft, and 18 special operations. The exercise was hosted jointly by the US and Ukrainian navies and directly targeted Russia, with NATO statements announcing the operation reading, "NATO supports Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity with its international recognized borders, extending to its territorial waters. NATO does not and will not recognize Russia's illegal and illegitimate annexation of Crimea and denounces its temporary occupation." Just days before Sea Breeze 2021 began, British destroyer HMS Defender engaged in a major provocation by entering waters off Crimea claimed by Russia. The Russian armed forces fired warning shots and dropped a bomb in the path of the warship, later threatening that if something similar happened again, they could bomb on target. Russian President Vladimir Putin claimed the UK ship was acting in coordination with a US reconnaissance aircraft, quote, "trying to uncover the actions of our armed forces to stop a provocation." The region has clearly been extensively prepared as a theater for combat with Russia. American media reported that the US was critically involved in the Ukrainian strike that sunk the Russian flagship, the Moskva, on April 14th. That these moves are now being made under the banner of alleviating a world hunger crisis is grotesque hypocrisy. This was underscored by former UK Foreign Secretary, Conservative Party leader William Hogg, in an opinion piece for The Times Tuesday. Putin's next move? A truce to split the West. Hogg urges NATO powers not to accept any Russian proposal for peace talks, explicitly deriding calls to do so to avert a further catastrophic escalation of either the war or global price rises. Ideally for you, Hogg writes of Putin, Western commentators will say, hooray, we always knew he wanted an off-ramp, and all wars end in agreement, and discuss how the cost of living crisis could be helped by your very generous offer to desist from the war you started. End quote. This is unacceptable to Hogg. What matters is not peace or hunger, but pursuing NATO's war aims. 19 children, 2 adults killed in Texas elementary school shooting, by Chase Lawrence. Another horrific mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas, Tuesday, left at least 19 children and 2 school employees dead at Robb Elementary School. It was the 30th shooting at a K-12 school so far this year in the U.S., and the deadliest since the 2012 Sandy Hook school shooting in Newton, Connecticut, where 20 children and 6 adults were killed. The shooting started around 11:32 a.m. local time. The district told Robb Elementary parents to stay away from the school during the day, which was put in lockdown. Children were transported to a nearby civic center from the school to be reunited with their parents afterward. The 18-year-old suspect, Salvador Ramos, a student at Uvalde High School, was killed in a gun battle with police, including Federal Customs and Border Protection (CBP) agents, who responded to the shooting. Uvalde is just 65 miles from the U.S.-Mexico border and the site of a CBP station. Ramos allegedly shot and killed his grandmother and had ditched his car before running into the elementary school armed with an AR-15 and multiple magazines. Sergeant Eric Estrada of the Texas Department of Public Safety told CNN News Tuesday night that Ramos was wearing body armor and was able to fight his way past police already at the school and began going classroom to classroom. University Health in San Antonio said it had 2 patients from the shooting, a child and an adult, with their condition unknown at this time. There may be another fatality, according to State Senator Roland Gutierrez, but authorities have not confirmed it. School shootings have occurred so far in 2022 at a rate of more than 1 per week. There have been 200 mass shootings so far this year, including a shooting at a supermarket in Buffalo, New York, by a fascist gunman who killed 10 people. President Joe Biden, having come back from his warmongering tour in Asia, held a 9-minute press conference where he gave perfunctory remarks, quoting scripture, calling for prayer, and denouncing the gun lobby. So tonight I ask the nation to pray for them, to give the parents and siblings the strength in the darkness they feel now. He said, as a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name will we do what we all know in our gut needs to be done? Biden also ordered flags to be flown at half-mast at all public buildings for 4 days. Once again, Biden and the political establishment, more broadly, are evading the deeper fundamental issues which give rise to the phenomenon of mass shootings. The U.S. indeed has the highest per capita gun ownership in the world, in no small part due to lobbying by weapons manufacturers. Former President Donald Trump, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, Senator Ted Cruz, and other fascistic representatives of the Republican Party will be speaking at a conference of the National Rifle Association in just 3 days. Last year, Abbott proudly signed a law which allows Texans to carry a handgun without a license or a permit. This, though, does not come close to explaining the mass shootings that have become a horrific part of American life. If anything, the focus of the Democrats and the gun lobby and gun control serves to obscure the real causes of these outbursts of violence. More information will emerge in the coming days to shed light on the particular circumstances behind the mass shooting in Texas. However, the regularity of such horrific acts of homicidal violence can only be understood in relation to the social reality of the United States, which is riven by extreme levels of inequality and overseen by a ruling class that promotes violence at every turn. In the U.S., over 1,000 people a year are killed by the police. Summary executions by the police continue to occur at a rate of 3 every day. Some of the most recent victims include Patrick Loyola, a Congolese refugee and auto parts worker who was shot execution style after a traffic stop, and DeAnthony Van Aden, who was shot running away in the parking lot of a grocery store. The U.S. government under both Biden and Trump has racked up over 1 million deaths from COVID-19, the highest absolute death toll in the world. The Biden administration has completely embraced Trump's pursuit of herd immunity and dropped all protective measures, preparing the way for the next million deaths. Biden is also working to escalate the U.S.-NATO war with Russia, funneling $20 billion in arms to keep the bloodbath in Ukraine continuing. The administration is deliberately and recklessly seeking to provoke a war with both Moscow and Beijing, the largest and third largest nuclear superpowers respectively. This is following 30 uninterrupted years of U.S. warfare around the world since the dissolution of the Soviet Union, where U.S. soldiers, tanks, drones, planes, and death squads are sent to impose neocolonial rule at the end of a bayonet. Millions around the world have perished at the hands of U.S. arms during this period, with whole societies reduced to rubble. This is not the picture of a rational, healthy society. The mass death, wars of aggression, militarism, and police killings are the product of a bankrupt ruling class, and this product finds its reflection in the massacres in schools, shopping centers, and elsewhere that have become a part of daily life in America. You can find all this and more at the World Socialist website, WSWS.org. This has been Archie Stone for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.